This podcast is a proud member of the Lamb Podcasting Network. Find the network at largeassmovieblogs.com.
And welcome back to another episode of The Film Pasture, the sister podcast to The Lambcast, which also can be found at largeassmovieblogs.com. I'm one of your hosts, The Vern, and joining me for, as always, our own lovely, I forgot the lady's name in the new Star Wars movie, it's Kristen Lopez. Hello, Kristen.
Hello, everybody.
Yes, yes. Got a few features to talk about. We're mainly going to be talking about the movies La La Land and The Love Witch. But I just got back from seeing the new Star Wars movie, Star Wars Rogue One something episode. Is it episode Rogue One? Yeah, anyways.
It's a spinoff. Yeah, it's not associated with any of the numbered Star Wars.
This is the one that is telling you how they got the plans to destroy the Death Star. And it has Felicity Jones and the voice of Alan Tudyk, Jimmy Smits. And it was an enjoyable movie, but I'm hearing a lot of people saying that it's better than Empire Strikes Back, and I wouldn't go that far. Now, you saw this, Kristen.
Yes.
Yes. And I listened to your episode on the Walt Sepe podcast where they talked about Kathleen Kennedy didn't want to put down a female director because she didn't think that they would be marketable enough.
She didn't think that they were competent enough.
Yeah. Now, I mean, do you think this movie would have benefited more from a female director? Or
I think it would have been benefited from a competent director.
Okay.
Of any gender. We should have known Gareth Edwards, and that was always kind of my thing, is that she thinks Gareth Edwards is competent. The man who gave us Godzilla, which nobody liked. And yet we gave him the keys to this franchise. And then whatever he was doing required another director to step in and redo it. And you can see the stitching to stitch this movie together, because it makes no sense for an hour and is utterly boring. And then is completely stupid for the other hour.
Well, I mean,
I did not like this at all.
You didn't like it at all. See, I enjoyed it, though, but I thought that if they're going to do a spinoff movie for Star Wars, fine. But I want them to tell a story that's never been told before. I know about the outcome of this movie already. And yes, trying to give her more of a backstory and having her father be the one that was taken by the Empire to build up the spaceship. That, the Death Star, I mean, that's fine, but that's like a very small element. And I felt like none of the other characters had much of a backstory.
No, none of the characters have backstory. They're very one note. They reference things in their past that I would have much rather seen than what we saw.
Yeah.
And that was something that irked me. You know, none of the characters have any type of presence or reason to exist, especially our heroine. After we got Rey, who was a big step in the right direction,
yeah.
Rey is just a huge three steps back. I mean, she's got daddy issues. There's a hackneyed attempt at romance. She's incompetent. I found nothing redeeming in this movie other than maybe some special effects.
Really? Okay. All right. I can't even tell you about who the other. I did like the robot. The robot was fun. I enjoyed that.
He was okay.
He was the comic sidekick, all right? He was. Yeah, I found it. Some of his one-liners were good, but that's all he was. Just the comic sidekick. There was nothing else really going on with that character. And I don't know. Like, people are saying this is better than Empire Strikes Back, and I'm like, It was a fun 2 hours. I enjoyed some parts of it. The 12-year-old in me enjoyed certain aspects of it, though. But when I look back at it, though, I can't really remember too much about it, which is kind of a sad thing.
yeah, there's nothing memorable about the movie at all. At all. The story sounds on paper like it would be interesting. It just fails utterly.
I mean, it's supposed to be like, you know, kind of like a heist movie about, you know, these bands getting together. I thought maybe it'd be like, you know, The Great Escape or some sort of like heist movie of this people getting together to try and get the plans, like a Ocean's 11 type thing. Because Ocean's 11, they had many different characters, but each character had their own little quirk about them. And this one, it just wasn't that way at all. It was just a way to cram in a lot of great Star Wars references. So, I don't know. Like, for my personal take right here, it's a fine movie. It's enjoyable to watch, but it's definitely not better than Empire Strikes Back.
It's not even better than Force Awakens.
Really? Okay. Oh, all right. Well, yeah, like I said before, I say see it if you want to, you know, but it's just not as memorable as I want it to be. But anyways, moving on from there, from Star Wars, what should we talk about first, Kristen? We got La La Land or The Love Witch. Which one did you want to talk about first?
Let's do Love Witch, because I saw that farther back, so my memory is probably going to be short.
Okay. All right. Let's go ahead and just play a quick little clip from that movie, and then we'll get into our discussion about it, okay? It was so tra-la-la and
so la-dee-da. Where were we? Men. You said we need to give them what they want. Well, what do men want?
Just a pretty woman to love and to take care of them and to make them feel like a man and to give them total freedom in whatever they want to do or be.
But what about what we want? How are we going to be equals with men if we keep catering to all of their needs?
I think that if you want love, you have to give love. Giving men sex is a way of unlocking their love potential.
You sound as if you've been brainwashed by the patriarchy. Your whole self-worth is wrapped up in pleasing a man. I'll admit I used sex to get this. But I'm not proud of it. The whole world doesn't revolve around a man's needs. If I gave Richard sex every time he wanted it, I'd be a wreck.
Poor Richard. He loves you, and he wants you, and you torture him. You have to give a man his fantasy.
His fantasy?
Yes, his fantasy. What I'm really interested in is love. You might say I'm addicted to love. I wonder if all women feel that way.
The Love Witch, directed by Anna Biller, tells the story of Elaine, played by Samantha Robinson, and she's a woman that has just moved to, I think it is LA or something, from San Francisco. Her last boyfriend, Jerry, has died. And at first it's from circumstances you don't know, but eventually find out that she poisoned him, and she wants to try to find a new mate, and she develops this love potion to have men fall in love with her, but then they can't handle the love, and so they die. This movie is a really kind of a strange movie, but I like it a lot. I will hear your thoughts about this movie, Kristen.
I don't have nearly the experience with Russ Meyer and kind of late 60s, early 70s melodrama that Anna Biller is referencing, but this is easily one of the most beautiful movies out there, much like with La La Land. It's a very opulent, candy-coated type of hyper-technicolor that we're not used to seeing. Samantha Robinson is, like, ethereally beautiful. I thought some of the decisions were really funny in terms of having her be this beautiful young woman in control and trying to seduce kind of these like schlubs who are just kind of like lucky that she's even giving them the time of day. But in an average movie, that's considered like she's the type of girl they deserve. Yeah. I think those are some of the more subversive elements that Biller's playing with. But it is a tough, you have to really be in the right mindset for this. This movie goes into a Ren Faire play for about 25 minutes that makes no sense, but it's just pretty to look at. The acting is suitably wooden because it's kind of supposed to be. And I think the third act builds to be more interesting than the preceding two acts, but it's something different. It's a wholly unique movie, I think, that's worth experiencing.
Yeah, now I have seen movies from Russ Meyer. I have seen Beyond the Valley of the Dolls and Faster Pussycat Kill Kill, and Anna does know how to take that same type of dialogue. You know, like, in the 30s, they had that, like, fast, rapid talk. Well, in these 70s movies, it is kind of like wooden dialogue. I even saw her previous film, Viva, which is supposed to represent a lot more of those exploitation films from the 70s. And the dialogue is just that same way, too. It's like everything's all bigger and brighter than it actually is. Yeah, I mean, I want to talk about that first scene in the restaurant with Elaine and Trish. And how basically Trish was saying that, well, look, I'm not proud of using sets to get my diamond ring, but I do. I want to hear your more of a taste of that scene right there, because in a way, Trish feels that Elaine is basically being brainwashed into, you know, giving just men just, you know, their desires of sleeping with them. You know, do you think that she is that way? And it turns out later on, when you see that big monologue that she has towards the end, you know, she realized that she wants to be the one that's more in control there. But for that first sequence there, you think that, well, gosh, this lady's just, you know, not doing anything really with her life. She's basically wants to, she's basically giving men what they want, but she's not really getting anything in return. You know,
I'm trying to recall the scene, because again, it's been about a month or two since I've seen it, and I've seen a lot of things since. But I think that for that monologue at the end especially, it shows what she's been doing the preceding time, which is kind of being in control of these relationships and making men feel these emotions. I mean, they essentially turn into women. And part of the fun is watching them go through the neediness and the... It's almost like watching the story... I know we have a movie about it, but I'm talking, like, realistically. It's almost like watching a man be pregnant. And, you know, you see, you hear those stories that if men had to give birth, there would be condom machines, like, everywhere, and abortion would be legal in 3 seconds. So as you watch these characters, these men who kind of praise themselves on being, like, rugged, manly men, kind of devolve into these kind of weeping, festering goons. It's comical as a woman because, you know, you're kind of sitting there thinking, like, wow, these are characters that have never experienced it. And essentially, it's saying that if men were to experience all the emotions that women have to hide every day, it would kill them. So when she has that monologue at the end, she's on point. You know, men tend to respond to the visual and to the physical because, according to this movie's kind of broad definition, men don't worry about, they're very much about the id, and they don't have to worry about hiding their emotions because they're men, they're the dominant party. So I think the movie plays a lot really subversively with gender.
Yeah, you know, and I thought it was great too how, you know, each man that she dates is very different from the other one. Like, the first guy she meets is a guy called Wayne, who is a teacher. You know, very kind of, like, masculine guy. He's got the big laugh right there. Takes her to this cabin where I'm sure he's taken, like, many dates before. Actually leaves, I think that's his wife, on the side of the road to go out with her. And, you know, this big dinner. And then she, like, gives him the drink. And then she has this technicolor raincoat that she takes off. And he starts tripping balls over this whole thing. And then the next scene, he's just, like, a blubbering mess, and he just can't take it anymore. I think he dies from a heart attack. I'm not quite sure, but she goes away because he's crying too much. She comes back. He's dead. The second guy was actually Trish's husband. She's the girl in the restaurant of the scene that we played earlier. But apparently for Richard, his thing is that after they got together, he just became very morose, like depressed. Like, Wayne, he became very kind of sad and just, he couldn't handle, you know, all this love and emotions. But Richard, he became more like depressed and quiet and actually took his own life. And then the third guy, Griff, who is played by Dion Keyes, he's the guy that in my mind seems to actually not fall for her love spell too much. Do you agree or disagree with that? He's the kind of guy that's able to like kind of like hold his own.
Well, he's essentially the equal, and because he doesn't want someone who's equal and willing to do by any means necessary, it's kind of funny that he becomes judgmental of her methods when he's the guy that we're alluding to the fact that he's like probably sleeping with coworkers and he's kind of a dick, and you know, he draws the line at her stuff. So we get a nice bloody ending, which I felt we really needed.
Yeah, for a horror film like that, yeah.
Yeah.
It's kind of funny too, because there's only one kill in this whole entire... Well, I mean, there are several deaths in this movie, but there's only really kind of like one kill in this movie. And this was on, I guess, Rolling Stone's, I guess top, like, horror movies of 2016 list. Which I found, I mean, I'm grateful that it's on the list right there, but I don't know if I consider The Love Witch to be a horror film.
I can see why it would be considered a horror film, but I don't know. I don't think it really lends itself to be one category. I think it would be more of a horror comedy, almost.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Definitely right there. Like I said before, this is a movie that I've only seen a couple times, actually, and I'm still confused about everything on there. I'm like the guys in this movie, too. I'm the guy that's like all kind of confused, don't know exactly how to handle all these different types of emotions I'm feeling right now for this flick right here, because especially there's like sequences too where she meets up at a bar with her other witches, and they are explaining about witches throughout the centuries and how at first there was no such thing as witches. They were just trying to control women, and then marriage was a way to kind of put those shackles on that right there. And, you know, get women to actually be more at home right there. Just so basically they wouldn't go out there and sleep around, that type of thing. And I found that type of thing to be kind of interesting. And like you mentioned before, near the end right there too, where Elaine was basically telling people, hey, look, I'm tired of being used. There's even great flashbacks of her, I guess, talking to her. Or she's having like flashbacks of her husband telling her that, well, you need to lose weight and you need to get this place cleaned up more. And then next scene's like, oh, you're so hot and I love you so much, I can't wait to have sex with you, that type of thing. So I would be interested to see who she was before the witches took over her life, because apparently she had this relationship with her husband Jerry, things went bad, she met with these witches who turned her into, you know, this love witch and made her own powerful and things like that. And I want to see more of what happened before that, if that made sense.
Yeah, I would agree. I think that the movie's long enough as it is. I think almost too long.
Yeah.
But it would be good to see the backstory just so we would know. But what we're presented with, I think, it does the job.
And I will say this, though. Even though I do agree with you, the story is a little bit long, story's a little bit confusing, I still think the visuals are really good. What's great thing about this movie is that Anna Biller did everything basically herself, except for the cinematography. She actually built the sets,
designed the costumes.
Yep, did a lot of the music for it too. And it's just amazing powerhouse. And I will be definitely interested after seeing her first film, Viva, and now this one. I'm definitely interested to see what she does next. And it would be nice too to see her do something outside this genre, because her last two movies have been sort of like movies that were set in the 70s and they had that 70s look to them. It would be cool if she could do like something from like the 80s or even the 30s or 20s, see her trying to do something different that way. Or even like
a
90s movie too, like, and actually have it be like set in the 90s and that 90s filter type of thing right there. I would be definitely interested in this. This is a film that I've been kind of in love with ever since I saw the trailer. and I've been trying to push for this movie. I even just, like, talked to her on Facebook because I noticed they were posting, like, her The Love Witch for free on YouTube. So I'm, like, trying to message her about that, making sure that she's getting the right amount of respect for it, though. This movie only played for a week in theaters where I lived, and a few people were there to see it. I'm glad I got some support, but not as much support as I kind of want it to be. Who do you think this movie would be for?
I'm definitely going to say genre fans. You have to be of a very specific mindset.
Okay, yeah. Because I think that most people in theater, when I saw it, though, I mean, they were kind of laughing at the whole dialogue for it, though. Like, yeah, it is kind of fun right there because you're not used to it, but because that's the way dialogue was in those type of movies. So, yes, she definitely does have a strong sense of style to that flick. So, if you had to give it the Love Witch rating, what would you give it, Kristen?
Oh, I'd probably give it a 6 out of 10. I mean, it's good. It's beautiful, but it's very much an acquired taste.
Fair enough. Here, I'm probably going to go with a little bit like higher out of 10 right there. I'm going to go at least an 8 because I think the performances are good. I think the only issue about this movie is that it comes a little bit too long towards the end right there. The cut back things a little bit more, it would have been just perfect, but other than that, I enjoy it. Let's move on to our basically last flick, but before we do, I'm going to take a quick break right now. We're going to play some ad spots about the podcast shows, and we'll be back to talk about our review of La La Land.
We are the Popcorn Poops.
My name is Dustin.
And my name is Jessica.
And together we produce Popcorn Poops, the best married couple movie commentary track podcast on the internet.
Join us each week as we take turns picking films and then watch and discuss them together. If you're at home or with a computer or device, you can sync up the movie and watch it right along with us.
However, you don't have to sync up the film to enjoy the show. Feel free to tune in like you would to any other podcast.
Please visit us on the internet at www.popcornpoops.com.
Again, that's www.popcornpoops.com.
Jordan, what? I want to watch a movie.
I want to play some f***ing tunes.
I want to watch a movie.
I want to play tunes.
Movie.
Music.
Movie.
Music.
Movie.
Music.
All right, fine. How about this? We will watch a movie, all right?
Okay.
Talk about that movie, and then we will listen to the soundtrack that went with that movie, and then talk about that as well.
Okay.
That sound good?
Yeah.
All right. So join us every episode on Screen Trats, where myself, the Vern, and Jordan Jeske, we will review a movie and then talk about the soundtrack that went with that movie. You can check us out on iTunes. Go to our site, screentrats.net. That's screen, screentrats.net. Join us for every episode. We hope you can join us, and we'll have a lot of fun, all right?
Yes, we will.
All right.
Hey, what are you listening to?
Blood, Guts, and Blu-ray.
What's Blood, Guts, and Blu-ray?
You've never heard of Blood, Guts, and Blu-ray?
I've never heard of Blood, Guts, and Blu-ray.
Blood, Guts, and Blu-ray is a horror movie podcast. They talk about horror movies they love and even the ones they hate. They're actually really entertaining. You can listen to them on iTunes.
Well, what if I don't have iTunes?
Then you can find them on Stitcher or YouTube, or we could listen together.
Yeah, that sounds great. So, your place and mine.
Wait, did you hear that?
Hear what?
But I didn't even get a chance to listen to Blood, Guts, and Blu-ray.
Blood, Guts, and Blu-ray will never die, but you will. Listen now on iTunes, Stitcher, and YouTube before it's too late. Part of the Core Temp Arts Podcast Network.
You're fired.
It's Christmas.
Yeah, I see the decorations. Good luck in the new year.
I just heard you play, and I wanted... It's pretty strong.
strange that we keep running into each other.
Maybe it means something.
I doubt it.
Yeah, I don't think so. You could just write your own roles, you know, write something that's as interesting as you are.
What are you gonna do?
I have my own club.
Is that gonna happen every time?
I think so.
How are you going to be a revolutionary if you're such a traditionalist? You're holding on to the past, but jazz is about the future.
So, we are now talking about La La Land. It's the story of Sebastian and Mia, played by Ryan Gosling and Emma Stone. They are two creatively inclined people living in Los Angeles. He is a pianist who wants to open a jazz club. She is a struggling actress. And they decide to make a go of a relationship. Meanwhile, they are singing and dancing about their life. It's a musical, if you have not guessed.
Now, where did you see this movie? I know you probably saw it in theaters, but what type of theater did you see it in?
Regular movie theater. No XD, no 3D, no nothing. So, just as is.
Was it, like, in a multiplex theater?
Yeah.
Okay, now I got the chance to see La La Land in kind of a palace movie theater type with the balcony and like curtains and everything like that, and that was kind of a cool experience to watch it with like a big crowd. There was like assigned seats, so the red curtains open up and the movie begins, and it's got the kind of small 1x33 aspect ratio of the Summit logo, and then it opens up to that CinemaScope label, and I have to admit, my heart just got really big. I got really excited. The opening dance sequence with them in the cars, I forgot the name of the song, but that sequence right there has got some of the most challenging camera movements mixed with the choreography that I have seen on film. I don't know how the hell they were able to light it up for each dance on the car right there, but that was just amazing. Yeah, this movie for me was like a lot of fun. I enjoyed it a lot. I do think there are some problems in the story of the movie, and I don't want to go into a spoilers here, but essentially these two characters are very much cliche characters. You know, you may agree or disagree, but I think that they're very kind of cliche characters. They're definitely characters you'd find in movies, but I don't mind it so much because I do think that Gosling and Stone have good chemistry with each other. They've had good chemistry ever since that one movie, Crazy Stupid Love, was that it?
Yeah.
Last movie they've been there. And they were great. For a musical, though, there were some times where, especially during the third act, where there wasn't much music at all. And my biggest issue with this movie was that during, I guess what I say now, well, basically during their big problems that they're having right there, everything gets solved, but we don't see how it gets solved, all right? Like, she does, you know, achieve her dream, and he also achieves his dream too, but we never see the struggle that went with it. And I just want to see that just a little bit. I know it's musical, it's all fantasy, but I just want to see that just a little bit. You know what
I'm
talking about?
For me, I like the movie a lot. I watch a lot of classic cinema. So for me, the references that Damien Chazelle's playing with in terms of harkening back to stuff like Top Hat and Swing Time and American in Paris and The Umbrellas of Cherbourg and The Young Girls of Rochefort, I got all of that. I really enjoyed that. The beginning and the end are my favorite parts of the movie. The middle is where I didn't get much enjoyment because there is no song and dance. It becomes a narrative drama where the characters are kind of having this won't they element of their relationship. So that didn't really work for me. I think if he had committed to the music full on, that would have been great. The ending doesn't have music because it's essentially the ending of American in Paris, which is just an extended dance sequence. That's what he's going for, at least. And I think your mileage is going to vary based on how well-versed you are in the references that he's going to go with.
You mentioned about, you know, Umbrellas of Cherbourg, and I saw that movie, so I got kind of the reference of that towards the end of
the ending is essentially, yeah, the Umbrellas of Cherbourg.
But I have not seen the Young Girls from Rochefort. I think that's another Jack Demme's
people. Yeah, it is.
That I have not seen yet. Or I have not seen American Paris. I've only seen, like, My Fair Lady, West Side Story, Sound of Music, just the standards right there, but I have not seen those other ones, which I probably should. But it's still, the only thing that I could also say negative about this movie too, I think it's really good, but do you think it deserves all the award love it's getting?
It's understandable why it is, because Hollywood loves to praise itself. They love a movie that commits to the golden age of cinema. Considering the year we've had, this is a very upbeat film in many ways. Even though things don't end happily ever after, it's still a candy-coated world of fantasy regardless.
Do you feel like this movie is going to basically be like The Artist, where everyone
loves... That's exactly what it's going to be. People who didn't like The Artist will probably not like this and feel that it doesn't deserve it. And people who love The Artist will feel this is great. I think The Artist is great, but I don't think this is a masterpiece. So, I mean, I tend to be... I'm a bit more nitpicky with this, but I still really enjoyed it. So I think that, yeah, it'll win Best Picture, but it'll be like The Artist win.
Yeah. Well, it's a good thing that you saw this movie too, because you are definitely a fan of classical movies and you've seen everything and you definitely mentioned all the references there too about this. That's why you're definitely a great person to have on the show, because you know everything about this. Now, do you feel that this will... Now, back in, like, it was like 2000... Moulin Rouge came out and then Chicago, and it was supposed to be the burst of the movie musical, and like everything could be movie musical, and then they've been made horrible ones after that. Now, do you think that since this is getting more popularity, there's going to be another resurgence of people trying to evoke classic musical again? Are we going to see a remake of a classic musical because this one did good? I mean, I'm just kind of curious about what's going to be the next step.
Musicals haven't gone away. I mean, musicals they've died out since the 60s, and then they came back, and they go away again, and then they come back. So I don't think we're going to get musicals greenlit all the time. I still think we'll be reliant on Broadway adaptations or stuff that's already been proven as name recognition. I don't think you're going to see a lot of original musicals like this, where it's, you know, somebody actually composing a score and doing that, unless it's got some serious backing behind it. But I don't think the musical is dead. I think it's just going to be more reliant on name branding, because that's just how Hollywood is with any franchise at this point.
All right. Like, are they going to just take a known property? I know, like, there's a lot of movies that have, like, musicals. Like, there's an Evil Dead musical. There's, like, a Legally Blonde musical.
Well, those are things that got Broadway musicals after their success as film.
Okay.
I think if we're going to get musicals, they'll be stuff that's already on Broadway.
Okay.
And then we'll transition to film.
Okay. All right, fair enough there. Do you have a favorite song from the movie? Because as much as I enjoyed seeing the music performed on screen with the people, I can't really remember any songs, really, except for maybe the last song that Emma Stone sang and maybe the first one. But other than that, but I liked it when I saw it on screen. I think if I heard it out of context, like on a CD itself, I don't know if I would enjoy it that much.
Oh, I've listened to the soundtrack plenty of times in my car, and it's great. I love it. Opening song, Another Day of Sun, is my favorite, although Audition, which is the Emma Stone Oscar number, is really good as well. And I think just the score is amazing to listen to as well.
Okay. All right. I just don't even know what the score for that movie here, but yeah. I enjoy it just as well right there. Like I said before, it's getting nominated for a bunch of awards. The cinematography, music, Gosling and Stone. The only thing that I'm a little hesitant about this, I believe it's been nominated for Best Screenplay.
And yeah.
I don't... That's the only thing, the two. It's not really that much of original story for the screenplay there.
I think it's just a natural progression. They need something to fit that. A couple other movies are going to go adapted just on hackneyed stupid reasons. So it makes sense if they want it to sweep.
Yeah, I mean, I can see the thing for score. I think the thing for, you know, for song maybe too, but I still think Ryan Gosling should be getting nominated for The Nice Guys before this one, because I thought he was much better. Especially for a comedy role, I would have picked Ryan Gosling for The Nice Guys.
I don't think he'll get nominated for an Oscar for this. If he does, it would be purely as a coattail nomination for Stone.
Yeah. Do you think Stone has a chance of being nominated for Best Actress?
Oh, she will. She will. If she wins is the question.
Okay. That's fair enough there. All right. We should probably do an actual Academy Awards prediction episode later on there. But closing thoughts there for La La Land. What's your score for this?
I really like this a lot. I have some issues with it. Choreography's not that strong. Don't like the Ryan Gosling. No. The choreography's not... Compared to 1940s, 1950s musicals, those are not complex dance routines at all. Those are very simplistic, made for dancers who don't dance. Ryan Gosling and Emma Stone are not dancers, and the dancing reflects that.
I thought they were pretty damn good for the dance. Then again, I can't dance for shit, so anytime someone can do
it. Yeah, I mean, they can dance. It's just that those routines are not strenuous. That's not Gene Kelly caliber dancing. If they had wanted to go for a real kind of musical throwback to the 40s, they would have had some, like, complex dancing. It's not that complex. Okay.
You're the expert here, Kristen, so you know more about this, all right? And, holy shit, they can stand up, they're dancing, moving without falling down, this is amazing, they did twirl, and whoa, shit.
And Ryan Gosling, I don't care for his character. I think there's a lot of issues regarding gender with this movie, but overall, I really enjoy this. I give this about a 7.5, an 8 out of 10. I have this on my best of the year, I think it's 6.
Whoa, okay. Yes, this will be possibly on my list as an honorable mention. I don't know yet. I still haven't done my list right there. But anyways, out of 10 points right there, I'll give it a 7.5, yeah. Enjoyable flick right there. I have some issues definitely during the third act. Without giving spoilers away, there's a sequence where Emma Stone has a flashback about how things could have been, and I found that to be just a major stopping point, mainly because that sequence goes on a little bit too long. But I found the songs to be enjoyable when they're on screen. I think Emma Stone, Ryan Gosling got some good chemistry with each other. They can dance well. Sure as hell dance better than I can. So I think to wrap up our conversations about La La Land and The Love Witch, I think we gave them both kind of positive reviews. We were kind of mixed on Star Wars Rogue One.
Kristen
sucks. Skip it. I was saying it's an enjoyable, fun movie here. It's just as not as great as everyone has made it out to be. So, but I just wrap up this episode of the Film Pasture. Let you know, folks, that we're sorry for the lack of episodes because both Kristen is busy doing rating and other podcasts. I started a new podcast myself. Tell me, Kristen, what is going on with Ticklish Business?
Ticklish Business is going good. We're going to do our last episode of 2016, talking about some classic movies we discovered for the first time. I'll have a special guest on that. We've closed out Walt Sent Me for the year. There's a new episode. I think it'll be up soon on the Santa Claus for Christmas, but you can get our episode right now on The Crow, which is out. So yeah, it's been a lot of work.
Nice. And I started a new podcast here in the Twin Cities. It's called Screen Tracks, where we review a movie and then talk about the soundtrack that went with it. Our first episode was about That Thing You Do. Check it out, screentracks.net. You can also hear my quick audio thoughts about the movie La La Land. I gave you just a quick little review of there, so check that out. We'll do more episodes in January. Next show that we're going to possibly record is about Dazed and Confused and about both the soundtracks there, so definitely seek that out. And then after that, we're most likely going to do Grease 2. Yes, skipping Grease 1 and going right to Grease 2 because we found a guest that wants to talk about Grease 2, so very thrilled about that. But anyways, thank you, Kristen, as always, for joining us again.
Always awesome to be here.
Love you as always. All right, I think it's going to wrap everything right now. Please follow us on Twitter. We are at Film Pasture. Like us on Facebook. Just type in Film Pasture. Definitely check out the Lambcast because they're going to do a whole extensive episode about Star Wars Rogue One. And it'd be interesting to see people's opinions about it, even though they're most likely going to be sucking everyone off. So, are they sucking? I can't say George Lucas anymore because he doesn't do Star Wars anymore. Disney, that's right. They're sucking off the mouse right there. But no, anyways, I'm not going to bash out anyone that talks about good about that movie. That's not nice. All right. But that's going to wrap everything up right now. Thanks, everyone, for joining us. And we will talk to you soon. All right.